Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Jake Mills-Jones is in the studio from Chasing the Stigma. Afternoon to you, Jake. Great to see you.
And you. How are you? You'll never guess where I've been today.
You know what? I don't think I can guess.
Only Chorley.
Oh, have you?
I've been to Chorley.
You've been to my hometown of Chorley.
Unfortunately, it's closed on Tuesdays. I went to Chorley today.
Chorley is one of those places that actually on a Wednesday does close.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, I never said it was great. Look, I wasn't asking for your review.
Well, it's a good job, really. But yeah, I thought I'm going to surprise you with that on it.
Yeah, I thought it was a great little start to the show. Guess where I've been? We could do that every week. Jake, it's great to see you. A double bill on this week's Mental Health Monday. Liam's story and then Omid Jalili came on for Men's Health Week as well. Now, you do stand-up comedy as well, obviously, as your mental health work. I thought it was interesting with Omid Jalili that actually he said that he became aware, he was essentially saying he had exhaustion from doing too much and not getting enough rest, recuperation and relaxation as part of the program as well. People can listen to it via the podcast. That's quite telling, that, isn't it? When you go on stage and when you're doing stand-up comedy, you're giving a lot of yourself away, or a portrayal of yourself. And if you yourself are not happy with who you are, it's going to be hard to kid an audience or con an audience into thinking that you're doing well.
Yeah. It's an incredibly vulnerable position that you're actually putting yourself in as a comedian, because more often than not, you don't actually know whether something works until you're actually saying it out loud on a mic in front of a live audience. And actually, even one step above that is that it can work one night and it can not work another night, depending on the audience. It was really interesting to hear describing how he kind of had those realizations mid-set, mid-show, as he was repeating jokes and lines and stuff. And
I mean, that presumably repeating a joke is absolutely no-no. Lesson one in stand-up school. Don't tell the same joke twice.
But that is, I can, do you know what? I can just totally sympathise on obviously a much smaller level. That exhaustion and realisation on stage of being like, oh no, I've already said this. It is such a vulnerable kind of position, and that tiredness, because it is an act. And I think people, it's one of those professions as well that people assume that you're getting on stage and making that up, and you're just kind of just, everyone's just off the cuff, and you're just kind of, but that's a lot of preparation. It's lines, it's essentially learning a script. And if you're not in it, then that's really, really hard.
I mean, the other thing, like, if you're a footballer and you don't score for a couple of games, you can go out and say, oh, I've had an injury, and people will go, oh, he's had an injury. He's a bit injury prone. But, you know, that's the reason. Or you say, well, my manager's not playing me in the best position. You know, a million excuses. I could come on here and say, oh, producer Lizzie didn't get me any good guests. I had Jake Mills on again. I could make excuses. But actually, stand-up comedy, you know, people will go, you're funny, you're not funny. And actually, whether or not it's you or a representation of you, it's you trying to earn a living, and people go, oh, don't go and see him. Oh, we saw him. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, and it's also one of them as well where you've got work booked in months, years in advance. And if you don't fancy it on the day, tough. You know, you've got to go, you've got to do it, you've got to perform, and it's that expectation, especially from a bigger comedian as well who's having people particularly there to see him, especially to see him. Yeah, it is odd. I was performing stand up when I was massively depressed. I was going to say it was a bit of an escape. I suppose it was in many ways. But it is just an act, and the thought of, I always remember I got a piece of advice when I started. I think it was Neil Fitzmaurice actually, who when I started comedy, and he said, "You don't get paid for performing; you get paid for waiting." And that always stuck with me, because that whole day, you can't do nothing, you don't want to do it, that anxiety that will come with it, you're just waiting to go on stage. As soon as you're on stage, that's a good part, that's the bit that you're enjoying, usually. But it's all that waiting around, which is actually, Oh, it's horrible. It really is.
Let's just move on to Liam Kennedy and his story as well, which people can again listen to on this week's Mental Health Monday as well. I mean, he went through his list of mental health battles that he'd been going through, and he's been through them all and, you know, still tackling them all. Liam, for people who can't tell, you know, he's not a big guy. He's a tall guy, but he's kind of built almost like a rugby player. You know, he's not overweight or anything like that, but he's like a big guy.
Oh, he's
big
a machine, guy, isn't he?
Scouse accent, you know, working class bloke. And I thought, these are connections, presumably, which this guy is able to make with people, which otherwise, you know, a professor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist who's going to be, you know, talking on maybe national TV or writing an article in a magazine that people from working class backgrounds maybe don't buy, they're not going to make those connections. But I thought Liam was a great example of somebody who actually, through simple methods of social media, simple and understandable poetry, can just get those messages out there. There's a relatability, a connectability between Liam and, I think, the general public.
Yeah, he's a brilliant lad, Liam. I first met Liam at Everton Community. He's a fantastic footballer, and too good. Do you know, like, not like one of them when you're playing five-a-side and you go, oh, who brought him? Because he's too good. But he's such a... You know what I like about Liam is that he's so honest about who he is now. And I think that's come out in the way that he's approached not only his recovery, but his poetry. And he's just, you know, as he said himself, he found that accidentally. And he's a great example of not only having coming through and that sign of recovery, but also how you can totally turn that, what was a bad experience for him, into a really positive through that experience that he's had. He's found this new person within himself who's writing incredible poetry, he's going to get a book out, all this stuff, he's turned that round.
Yeah, one of the things I tried to sort of make the point of with Liam was the fact that, you know, for this guy, semi-pro footballer, you know, working class bloke, the answer, part of the solution for him was poetry. Now, there's going to be loads of people who are going through, you know, the 10 weeks of hell that Liam talked about. There might be 10 months of hell, might be 10 years of hell. And I asked him about how do you know that moment is coming? And he says, you know, you've almost got to imagine it. But I thought he was the perfect person to sort of tell that story, because he would never have said 10 years ago that poetry might be part of his solution. And yet along that way, he found that. And I guess people have got to be open to that idea that there is something new that they've not done before that might be part of the solution for them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's finding a way of expressing yourself or releasing that kind of... That's what Liam said, is that he finds it that he can release the things that are kind of in his mind, in his head, things that he's thinking, he can get them down paper and turn them into something beautiful as well. It's the really, really fantastic poems that he's able to do. But a big thing that for Liam and the other people on that course, it's a fantastic example of how these type of, you know, like the Everton in the Community Imagine Your Goals programme, how programmes like this can be absolutely life-saving. You've heard Liam talk about it. We've heard Colin Dolan talk about it in the past. I've talked about it where I've gone and I've been amongst the group. It's just a bunch of fellas who were playing football together, not necessarily talking about anything while they're playing. But then they've created this community. They've got something. They've got people to look out for them. And I've got quite a few of them. I added them on Facebook when I met them a while ago. And I can see if any of them have a bad time, and they might put it on Facebook, they rally around each other, they offer that support. That's the intervention, that's the prevention. They're the type of services that are absolutely crucial to the grassroots communities. They're absolutely crucial.
But that's actually something which, you know, as communities in the past would come together. Such a body needs some support, right, go around, knock on their door. Mm. It happens now in a slightly different way because of sort of the digital world in which we live. But actually, it's not a new thing. That's not, you know, everybody's, you know, become a hippie about their mental health or anything like that. It's just that idea of communities, social groups, stick together, help each other out along the way. We've got Jake Mills with us in the studio, Mental Health Extra this week. The Mental Health Monday podcast is available to download and listen to for absolutely free, and there are previous episodes there. Now, let me just double check. Episode 68 this week, wow. Entitled Mental Health Warrior.
That's brilliant.
Includes Omid Jalili's interview as well. Someone we've been speaking to here at the station is George Ezra. He's got a new album out, and George has been talking about how writing music and recording music works for him in regard to his own mental health after he had some battles following on from recent success that he's had within the music world. He's been working a lot as well with the charity Mind as well, and he's been setting out his own life when it comes to mental health. Let's take a listen on Mental Health Extra.
Mind are a charity that I supported personally and privately for years. Just, you know, I had a kind of an amount each month I'd give to them. And then I came off tour of the first record, and for the first time in my life, I started to experience what I can now say was kind of mental health issues. And they come in all shapes and sizes. And I think, firstly, just having the vocabulary to admit that that's what's going on, I think is a big thing. And I think, you know, and I should just say as well, this was a period of time which I'm now no longer in, and it was more. I think it was to do with when my experience was when you're on tour, you're in your own bubble, you know, and you're going from town to town and you are very much in your own world. And then coming off, it felt like a funny world to be in 2016, this was. And it felt like there was a lot of angst in the world in general. And then I had no work either because we were off tour. My one role was to write songs and you can't turn that on or off. So I found that I really didn't feel like I was part of a team, which I think all of us need. You know, whatever our job is, our jobs are important and it's nice to feel like you're part of something. So that's what I was going through. And so I wrote this album that was about escape, and it's okay to switch off from time to time. And I'm happy. I'm very fortunate to say that I'm much better now, and that's brilliant. But it just became apparent to me how quickly it can creep up on you and how unprepared you can be. It's hard, as I said, to have the vocabulary even, to even go, you know, if I walked into your studio now with a broken arm, it would be in a cast and you'd know, you know, something was up. But I think people are very able to smile and to put a front on and to suppress things. And I think the fact I heard was that one in four of us will experience some form of, you know, will be affected by mental health issues. And the truth is, I think all of us will be, even if not directly, people we know and love. It's going on. I think it's a brilliant thing that people are starting to talk. And I think the main thing that I like to say is that there is absolutely no shame in it. I think that you might not think it, but I'm sure all of us have people that you could ring up and they'd be more than willing to hear you talk. And if you don't feel like you have somebody, you know, within your instant friend group or family, or you don't know how to approach that, a charity like Mind are just fantastic because you can ring them up and they're not going to judge you in any way, shape or form, and they're going to just hear you out, and then they are professionally, you know, equipped as to give you advice where it might be best to turn. So I think it's all good conversation.
George Ezra, it's all good conversation. Jake Mills is with us for Mental Health Extra. George has become a strong voice when it comes to mental health, people like Stephen Fry along the way as well. And we often talk about the fact it can be anyone and everyone from different situations. We've seen a number of high-profile suicides, haven't we, in the news very recently from the world of fashion, from the world of gourmet food and everything in between. These things come around, and when they do come around, everyone goes, oh, what's that about? And then we sad for a bit and people mourn, and that's right. And then we quickly move on, don't we? And then another one comes around and we then sad about that. I mean, and that's kind of fine because that's how people work and that's kind of how the news agenda works. I just wonder whether or not I don't want to say we don't need to be making like capital from these high profile deaths, but it's like, oh, that was a sad death. What was it? Suicide. All right. Like cause of death, suicide. All right. Okay. You know.
I think you're spot on. I'm not going to argue against that in any way. I think there's certain times and dates when people care about it for a little bit and then it does go away again. I think this week, though, I do think with Anthony Bourdain, I think it did affect people a little bit differently in the way that Robin Williams did, actually. Because I know to a lot of people, he was a bit of a hero, really. Somebody who had this perfect life, who travelled the world, ate amazing food, sense of humour, a bit of a rock star of the chefing world. But I think in the same way with Robin Williams, it was a bit of a, all right, he can be affected. And I did feel that a little bit. from the reactions. But as you said, it's what you do after that initial reaction and the kind of that grieving period where you're thinking, oh, I wasn't really prepared for that, and then it does go away, and it's about how we can stop it going away. And you know, people like George Edward who are lending their voice to it, that's really important and good,
because it's almost like we're in this sort of like ongoing epidemic of suicide. You know, it was an epidemic. Yeah. If there were no suicides, then suddenly there was suicide, we'd be going, let's do something about it. But because they are ongoing, and they are have always been ongoing, it's almost like, oh, right, well, this is now just something that happens. And sometimes it'll happen to famous people. Sometimes it'll be something that happens to a friend or a family member or somebody that you know or somebody that you don't know. But what we do know is that it will happen again. It'll happen today. It'll happen tomorrow. It'll happen the day after. We might not always hear about it in the news, but this is an ongoing epidemic of suicide right across the country.
It absolutely is, yeah. And I think something that stood out for me this week was with Kate Spade passing, and her sister came out and said it was not a surprise to me. She had spoke about it. She had spoke about suicidal thoughts that she'd had. And it's, for me, that was kind of, it's quite important that we have that conversation about what you do if somebody was to show that.
Well, it's interesting you say that, you know, because I notice, you know, whenever you get famous rock stars, there's been a number of them who have died as a result of suicide recently. And then he goes, oh, read this quote from a magazine he did in, 18 months ago. And he literally says in the interview, I'm not going to make it the next 2 years. I go to very dark places. I don't think I can come. It's put out on paper and people go, oh, isn't that poignant, the thing he said? No, that was the moment.
Yeah.
That was the moment where he was saying, suicide is on my agenda.
And
help needs to come. And then people go, oh, he obviously was in a dark place. You think, well, that's the intervention point. That was the point where people would have gone, oh, mate, do you realise that X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, and that's why... That's why it has to happen, that we have the conversations with people who aren't necessarily the ones who are sick or suicidal themselves. It's about the listening ears, the shoulders to cry on, the people who can acknowledge that there's a problem, who can spot signs and who can do something about it. And I think there is a problem there because as a society, we're not educated on mental health in general. So that's suicide prevention and what to do if somebody was to kind of show signs of that. I think it's kind of our natural reaction is to pretend that we didn't see it and to just hide away from it in the hope that it goes away because we don't actually know what to do. And that's, you know, like what we've talked about with the Everton and the community stuff and that type of approach. And this as well, that's exactly why we set up Chasing the Stigma and the Hub of Hope, is to say everyone can be aware of the help and support that's around, especially the people who somebody might turn to.
And that was one of the great things about the conversation we had with Liam, that idea that he never accepted that the version of himself which was going through these terrible mental health battles was the true Liam. Actually, he said that the real him was in there. It was a 1%. It was a tiny percentage that only, you know, got a tiny share of his actual, you know, mind space. He said, but he knew the real him was in there, as opposed to currently, instead of thinking, well, I'm obviously the 99%, I'm the person who's not supposed to be happy, I'm the person who's going to be hearing voices, I'm going to be the person who's stressed and anxious all the time, I'm going to be the person who's not confident leaving a house. But he knew that the real him, the Liam that he knew and the one that his partner had fallen in love with as well, was in there. And he wanted to get that guy out, and he got the help to get that guy out, or certainly to the forefront.
Yeah, and I think that strength of Liam is what makes him such a massive inspiration to me and so many other people as well. He's 1%, but it's, you know, it's still hope. 1% is 1%. It's he's done an amazing job really of getting himself where he is now and wanting and definitely helping other people.
Apart from going to Chorley, what else have you been up to?
It's hard to talk. I mean, everything just seems to just fall underneath that now. Chasing Stigma's brand new website is now launched, which is chasingstigma.co.uk. We've just partnered up with the National Suicide Prevention Alliance as well to be part of their alliance. And we're just cracking on. We're getting the message out there that there's hope and that there's a support available for anybody who needs it.
Chasingthestigma.co.uk. Is that right?
That's right.
And the hubofhope.co.uk. Hubofhope.co.uk if you want to find mental health services close to where you live. If you type that in for Chorley, you'll find a place just around the corner from me.
Well, there you
Lancashire
go.
Mind HQ.
And
there
you go. You'll find more soon.
There you go. Oh, exciting times. It's Radio City Talk, Mental Health Extra, following on from Mental Health Monday every Tuesday here on Radio City Talk. Drop your emails in if you want to get involved on the programme. Mick at radiocity.co.uk. That's Mick at radiocity.co.uk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.